Resorts World Catskills, where luxury and excitement are so close by. Catch all the sports action and so much more at Resorts World Catskills. Dial *RWCAT to learn more.
And a very good Saturday morning to everyone. Another gorgeous summer Saturday here in New York City. It's Pat O'Keefe sitting in once again for Dave Rothenberg. Happy to be with you for the next 3 hours as we take this Dave Rothenberg show up till noon. We've got Ty Butler producing, of course, and Michelle Mason back running the board. Great to see both of you. Baseball season has resumed here in New York in a predictable way on both sides of town, and another crazy, crazy week in the NBA. I hesitant to say this, but I do think this might be the last crazy week of the NBA for this offseason, but you never say never in this league. And I would like to thank the NBA and the executives and the general managers, because for somebody like me who hosts these shows on Friday nights occasionally and usually Saturday mornings during the month of July, they've spread it out rather nicely for me. Last Friday night, the Kawhi Leonard signing, the Paul George trade in the middle of the night, gave us plenty to talk about last Saturday. And this week, still the remnants of the Oklahoma City-Houston blockbuster that sent Russell Westbrook to the Rockets and Chris Paul to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So, of course, we're going to get into that. We're going to talk a lot of NBA. We're going to be joined by Ed Cohen, my colleague on the Knicks radio broadcast, our play-by-play announcer here on 98.7 ESPN New York. Ed will join us at 10 o'clock. He and Brendan Brown have been calling the Knicks Summer League games on MSG Network. So we'll get Ed's thoughts on what he's seen from some of the young guys and his thoughts on the new-look Knicks roster. So that's coming up at 10 o'clock. Do want to start with the baseball, though, and what we saw last night. And it's interesting, especially baseball more than any other sport, you don't want to make too much of one game. But I think what we saw in each game with the Yankees and the Mets last night can kind of give you an idea of what we can expect for the rest of this season. And look, the All-Star break, it's a time to relax. It's a time to take a deep breath. It's a time to kind of reset and refresh and really get ready for the stretch run. And because there's 70 games left as opposed to 81, it's not the exact halfway point. It really is kind of a stretch run from here on through the end of the regular season. So a team like the Yankees, obviously, they probably didn't want to stop playing because they've been playing so well lately. But a team like the Mets or any number of teams, there's about 6 to 10 of them right now that went into the All-Star break with, mathematically anyways, you can make an argument that, hey, we get hot. We have a hot 2 weeks. We go 8-2. We go 10-3. We can get right back in the wild card race. And the Mets were in that situation. A lot of other teams were in that situation. But what we saw from the Yankees last night, a workmanlike, a businesslike 4-0 victory over an inferior opponent in the Toronto Blue Jays. And that's been one of the Yankees' specialties this season, is taking care of business against the dregs of the American League. And there's a lot of dregs out there this year. There's the Blue Jays, there's the Orioles, there's the Mariners. The Yankees have beaten up on all of them. The Mets were playing some dregs last night as well. Unfortunately for the Mets, they're turning into the dregs of the National League, because you could arguably make the case for the Mets coming into the second half of the season. Hey, we go 8-2, and we're back in this thing. At least you can talk about being a contender in the wild card race. That's the danger of the second wild card. And I was just talking about that with Scott at the end of his show. That's the danger of the second wild card. It gives more teams the illusion on the back end of that, that they're not completely out of it. The Mets were 6 games out of the second wild card spot entering last night. Never mind the fact that they are the second worst team in the National League. Just look at the games behind column and you think you got a chance. You have an 8-2 week. You crawl back to 3.5, 4 games before the trade deadline, and maybe that can change your output. Well, any thoughts of that, I think, were put to rest in a lifeless, listless, energyless first game back against the only team in the National League with a worse record than the Mets. And it's just a microcosm of this Mets season. On a day that the general manager stands up, answers all the questions, tries to explain himself, gives his State of the Mets address, that's how the team responds with a performance like that last night against Miami. Just an absolute abomination of a performance. Jason Vargas, who surprisingly has been one of the few bright spots on the team this year, the way he's pitched, reverted to 2018 Jason Vargas form, and the rest of the team followed suit. And the Mets are going nowhere in 2019. And one of the concerning things about this organization and this roster is the way that they seem to react, or more correctly, not react to the people in charge. I think we gave up hope a long time ago that this team's going to react or respond to anything that Mickey Callaway has to say. And even Brody Van Wagenen. In late June, he fires Dave Island, a pitching coach with a long track record. He's been a pitching coach for two World Series champions, two different teams. Fires Dave Island, and how does the team respond? They've gone 5-12 since firing Dave Island. Usually if you're a manager or a general manager and you make moves like that in season, you do it because it's a soft spot of your schedule. You think it can provide a spark and you want to see instant results. Instant results. He has. They responded to that by going 5-12 since Dave Island was shown the door. The more changes are made, the less this team seems to respond in a positive manner. And now it is on to 2020. Because all is not lost for the Mets going forward. I remember looking at the construction of this Mets roster last year. At this time, once again, they were out of the playoff race. And other than Jacob deGrom, and I was actually in the camp last year that you should trade Jacob deGrom, because fresh on my mind was what the Yankees had done in 2016 when they traded Aroldis Chapman and they traded Andrew Miller, and they kind of set themselves up for this run that they seem ready to go on. But the market has changed a little bit. I don't know if the Mets would have been able to get that kind of value for Jacob deGrom last year. It would have come close, but that's why I think the Mets should have seriously looked into a complete reset last year, led by parting ways with Jacob deGrom. That was a year ago. Now I look at the Mets roster. Jacob deGrom is obviously signed to a long-term contract. And you have these two all-stars who kind of fell in your lap. I mean, Alonso and McNeil are clearly building blocks for the future of this franchise. I mean, there's nothing not to like about either one of them. But they were not the most highly regarded prospects in the Mets system. Alonso finally got there at the end of last season, but even McNeil, if you remember last year, the second half of the season, he was hitting close to 400 in AAA, and it seemed like it took forever for the Mets to bring him up to the major leagues. It seemed like they weren't completely sold on him, and I think they expected him to kind of revert to maybe a 260, 270 hitter without a great glove in the majors. That hasn't happened. He came up last year. He hit last year. He's hitting this year, 350. So I think we could say right now that you have two building. And you know what? I'm saying they fell into the Mets' lap just to kind of give them a hard time. Who cares how they fell into their lap? They did develop them, okay? Maybe they didn't recognize their talent right away, but they developed them, and they're on the Mets right now. So who cares how they got here? So you have two guys like that who you can build around. You have Jacob deGrom who you can build around. You have pitchers on your staff with at least a track record. Noah Syndergaard's track record over the course of his career is not a pitcher with a 4.63 earned run average. Now, Steven Matz's track record is what he's been this year. He's a guy who can pitch well at times. He's a guy who has trouble staying healthy, and he's a guy who can be inconsistent. I think we're starting to see Zach Wheeler turn into somebody who can be a middle-of-the-rotation guy and a good team. So the Mets, unlike last year, actually have pieces on their roster to build around. What they need to do is they need to forget about any illusions that they can compete for a wild card spot in 2019 and start making moves that can set them up for 2020 and beyond. Because if you look at the Mets with these building blocks, with this core in place, if you look at it from the 2020 perspective, they are not that far away. But can the general manager do that? Can Brody Van Wagenen swallow his ego enough to give up on this season? The season that started with him in the batting cage, taking swings and saying to the rest of the National League East, come and get us. Can he swallow his ego enough to focus on what needs to be done for this franchise going forward? Because of what they have on the roster right now, some key pieces in some key places, they are not actually that far away. Van Wagenen spoke yesterday. We'll hear what he had to say. The number to call, of course, is 1-800-919-3776. We'll get into the Mets, the Yankees as well. Look, for the Yankees right now, it's all about July 31st and what move or moves they will make between now and then. I think the Yankees have proven they're fine for the regular season, but as we know in Major League Baseball, especially now with so many rounds of playoffs, the regular season and the postseason is completely different. And the Yankees, as presently constructed, I think, are not ready to go to the World Series. What do they need to do? We'll talk about that as well. 1-800-919-3776. 1-800-919-ESPN. It's Pat O'Keefe in for Dave Rothenberg. The Mets schedule, and I know I'm doing what I'm telling Brody Van Wagenen not to do, but I'm not running the team. The Mets schedule out of the All-Star break isn't a murderer's row. Okay. I mean, obviously they punted on last night's game, but you've got two more in Miami, and then you go to Minnesota for two games. Obviously that's not easy. But then you've got San Francisco for four. Yes, on the road, but San Francisco's a bad team. Then you come home for a homestand with the Padres and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Those are two teams right around 500. Then you go to Chicago to take on the White Sox, then Pittsburgh on the road, and then you come home for four games against Miami. So from now until August 7th, you're really only playing one good baseball team, like one above average baseball team. And that's two games in Minnesota next Tuesday and Wednesday. Other than that, there's a lot of winnable games out there. So we'll see. I mean, coming into last night's game, I said the Mets are an 8-2 run away from possibly thinking of themselves as contenders in this wild card race. Well, they already lost one of those games last night. So now I guess they would be an 8-1 run away from possibly being a contender. Brody Van Wagenen on SNY yesterday as the second half of the season got underway, was asked a series of questions, and one of which is how he will approach the rest of July leading up to the trade deadline. Will he be a buyer or will he be a seller?
We've got three games here. We got one tonight. And this team, I know, and no one in that clubhouse is going to concede any of the games as we go forward. But at the same point, we have to listen to other opportunities. We have to be open-minded to offers that are presented to us on players that exist on this roster, and be mindful of what next year looks like as well. And I think those will be the factors that go into our decision making.
So Van Wagenen at least addressing the fact that they do need to seriously look at 2020 and beyond when approaching this trade deadline. Here's more from Van Wagenen.
Well, we certainly don't want to take a step back from where we are right now. We want to win more games in the second half so that we're not as far out of contention as we are right now. But we have to identify opportunities, and we have to put ourselves in a position where we're better than we are today. So progress is required, and we'll evaluate sort of the direction of the club in the offseason. But right now, we have to be open to opportunities that's going to yield us more talent, more results.
The good news is he says he doesn't want to take a step back. There's not many steps that you can take back from where you are right now. A look at the National League standings shows only one team behind them, and that's the team that beat up on them last night, the Miami Marlins. Let's go to the phones. 1-800-919-3776. We'll bring in Walter from Yonkers. Good morning, Walter.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Good. Man? How you doing, man?
Listen, I just have 2 points. The Mets, you better forget about them. They're not going to be good for like 2 years. And I mean, I'm not even counting this year, okay? They're just horrible. They bought this guy a Van Wagenen, and he's horrible. Everybody knew, you know, he couldn't do this job, all right? Fine. He's an agent. Be an agent. Okay, so my other point is the Yankees. I think the Yankees are going to be in the World Series with the Dodgers.
Yankees-Dodgers World Series is very, very appealing, Walter.
Yeah, I love it. And, that's it, man. That's all I had to say, and thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in this morning, Walter. Yankees-Dodgers, two best records in baseball right now. Yankees with the best record in the American League, Dodgers with the best record in Major League Baseball. Dodgers have better pitching. When you look at the Yankees and the Dodgers, I think the Dodgers are more set up for a run to the World Series once the playoffs begin. The Yankees are set up for the regular season, no doubt about that. They've proven it throughout the year. It helps that there's several bad teams in the American League that the Yankees are beating up on. Let's go to Alex in the car. Alex, what's up?
Hey, Pat, first of all, that guy Walter, he's a real genius. He thinks the best two records in the MLB are going to make it to the
World Series. Hey, you know what? It doesn't always happen that way, though, Alex.
Real Nostradamus over there.
All right, what do you got?
Secondly, I don't know if this is an indictment on you. I love 98.7. I love all you guys all the time. But we got to stop talking about the Mets. Nobody cares about the Mets. The Mets are done. It's over. No one wants to hear about it. I want to keep the radio station on, but we can't talk about the Mets.
All right, so what do you want to talk about?
All right, so what I want to talk about is what the Yankees need to do. And I thought it was you when I first called in. I guess maybe it was another caller saying that the Yankees pitching was okay for the postseason. Well, it's not. They need to make a trade for an ace, and I'll tell you why. If you look at Houston, they got a guy like Garrett Cole and Verlander. Those guys can go twice in a seven-game series. You look at the Yankees starting rotation, we don't have those guys right now. Tanaka's half of that guy. You can depend on him maybe to be that guy, but half of the time he's not. CC, we don't know. He's very old. He could probably maybe do it one more time. Hopefully he does, but you don't know. You need a guy, and this is who I want the Yankees to go out and get, is Trevor Bauer. He's a small market team with the Indians right now who are underperforming. They cannot sign and spend a lot of money. What we do is we give up the farm, give him back Frazier, give up everyone besides Florial, and you go out and get a guy who could pitch two times in a seven-game series, give you that 7 to 6 inning start that you need to be able to perform and win World Series, and that needs to be done. But listen, I also have all the faith in the world in Cashman. He knows what he's doing. I hope he's working behind the scenes. But the way it's constructed right now, you know, who's performing for us? We got Domingo Roman. He's great. But what happened 2 years ago when we saw a great pitcher that has never had playoff experience with Sebi? I was at that game in the wild card when I almost, you know, crapped my pants in the first inning.
Well, hold on. You know, Al, yeah, I hear you. I was at that game, too. The Yankees won that game. They went on to the next round, and he was terrific against the Indians. So he got it out of his system.
100%. I mean, look, did he get out of his system? Maybe.
Not completely, you know, because he was bad last year against the Red Sox. The jury's still out on Sevy in the postseason. Yes, we know that.
I agree with that. And what I'm also saying is that we don't even know where he's at right now physically. You know, how many games is he going to have before he's coming in the postseason? So I just think that we need that guy. I think that with our bullpen, we can, you know, piece together. Maybe it was you saying that or another caller. We can piece together those other innings. But we need at least one other guy who we know is going to give us six for two games in a seven-game series so we can have that strength in the bullpen. Because if we don't have that guy, the bullpen's going to be depleted. I know we're going to put up seven runs every game, but it's just not going to work in the playoffs against other teams that can hit. Whether it's Houston, Dodgers, you know, it's just not going to work.
Alex, I agree. I will say I did not say that the Yankees do not need another starter. I haven't commented on it yet until right now, but I do agree with our last caller, Alex. I think the Yankees need another starter. I think they need a top-of-the-line starter because, like I said before, there's a difference between what it takes to win in the regular season and what it takes to win in October. And the example I would give, our last caller beat me to the punch. You look at Houston, they've got Justin Verlander, they've got Garrett Cole at the top of their pitching rotation. The Yankees do not have that right now. And even when Luis Severino comes back this year, he's not going to be that for the Yankees this year. First of all, we don't know when or if he's coming back. Let's assume he does come back at some point. I think we're already past the point this year where Severino can stretch himself out enough to be a top of the rotation 6-7 inning ace that he has been in the past for the Yankees. I don't think the Yankees are going to have that guy this year. Trevor Bauer is one name. The name I like is still Madison Bumgarner. I think you have to give up more for Trevor Bauer because Bauer's under team control for next year as well. Bumgarner's in the last year of his contract. He's a straight-up free agent. I don't think you have to give up as much for a guy who's not under control beyond this year. Plus, I think when it comes down to it, I'd rather have Madison Bumgarner on the mound for the Yankees in the postseason than Trevor Bauer or than anybody else who's available, to be honest with you. I know his numbers are not what they used to be, but Bumgarner's pitched for a bad team for a couple of years. Lately, he has shown signs of life, and in the grand scheme of things, he's not really that old. And we got sucked into this 2 years ago. Justin Verlander seemed like he was kind of at the end of the rope in his long, successful tenure for the Detroit Tigers. And he was there for the taking in the last minute before the second trade deadline at the end of August 2 years ago when the Astros finally pulled the trigger and made the move. And without that move, the Astros don't win the World Series 2 years ago. And look at Verlander. He's still doing it. He's still a top-of-the-rotation guy. He's still starting in the All-Star game for the American League and blowing batters away for the American League. He's, right now, the best pitcher in the American League. And when you look at what the Yankees have in their pitching rotation, it doesn't match up with Verlander and Cole in Houston. It doesn't match up with Tampa Bay right now with Charlie Morton and Blake Snell. Look, Tanaka is what he is, and I think if Tanaka's shown us one thing in the last couple of postseasons, he raises his level in the postseason. Tanaka's always been a really good postseason starter. Even if you go back to the 2015 wild card game, the one the Yankees lost to Dallas Keuchel, Tanaka started that game. Yankees offense did nothing against Keuchel and the Astros bullpen. Tanaka was good in that game. He was unbelievable 2 years ago in the Indian series, in the division series, the game that Greg Bird hit the solo home run off of Andrew Miller with the Yankees down 2-0. Tanaka was unbelievable that game. He was great in the ALCS against Houston. He was good last year. Tanaka's fine in the postseason. You've got Tanaka. I put him up there with any of those guys I just mentioned outside of Verlander. I put him up there with Cole. I put him up there with Blake Snell. I put him up there with Charlie Morton. I put him up there with the best pitchers in the American League. Tanaka always seems to rise to the occasion, but the Yankees need that other piece. And ideally, they can bring in a piece to go above Tanaka. And that's where Madison Bumgarner fits very nicely. Look, I was thinking about the Yankees trades that they made in 2016, 2 years ago, when they did their semi-rebuild. They still tried to contend for a wild card spot that year, but they traded off Andrew Miller and they traded off Aroldis Chapman, and they got a ton of prospects back. And, you don't want to judge trades when they happen because it's impossible to do that. But let's look back now. It's almost 3 years later. It's just about 3 years later. Let's look back now at what the Yankees got for those trades. They traded Aroldis Chapman to the Chicago Cubs, and they got back, obviously, Gleyber Torres, who's already a two-time All-Star second baseman and is going to be the Yankees' second baseman for the next decade. Win. Win for the Yankees right there. On top of that, they got Billy McKinney, an outfielder, who they ended up packaging along with Brandon Drury to the Blue Jays for Jay Happ. Now, Happ was very good last year, and he hasn't been good this year. He hasn't been terrible, but he hasn't been good. But he's also a member of the Yankees pitching rotation right now. And then you look at the trade that they made with Cleveland. Now, with Cleveland, you gave up Andrew Miller, who helped lead the Indians to the World Series that year. You got back Justice Sheffield, who you packaged in a trade to Seattle for James Paxton. Again, not what you wanted him to be so far, but he's also a member of the Yankees pitching rotation. And then the other guy you got back in the Andrew Miller trade with Cleveland was Clint Frazier. And that's the key name here, because that is the biggest chip that the Yankees have to play. The Yankees had all of these prospects in their farm system, Miguel Andujar and Clint Frazier and Gary Sanchez and Gleyber Torres. Those guys are no longer prospects. Now they're all-stars, or at least everyday players, or in the case of Miguel Andujar, injured. Okay, so the prospects, the chickens have come home to roost, okay? The prospects are in the major leagues. Many of them are all-stars. For the most part, that young core of baby bombers, as they were known, has panned out. They've panned out to the tune of the best record in the American League right now. The one guy who's still out there, who can still be considered a prospect, is Clint Frazier. Now, what is Clint Frazier? Clint Frazier proved this year he is a major league caliber bat, above average major league caliber bat. He played 53 games this year, consistent playing time for about a month and a half, 2 months, and he has an .843 OPS. The guy can hit in the major leagues. It's not the biggest sample size, but it's enough of a sample size to show that Clint Frazier is an above average major league hitter. We know he can't field right now. Now, can he turn himself into an adequate fielder? I think he can. You know, Frazier had his problems with the media a couple of times. That doesn't make him a bad guy. That doesn't make him a bad fit. It also doesn't mean he's not going to work hard to get better. And what I saw from Clint Frazier during his brief time with the Yankees this year, he was always out in the outfield 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon working on fly balls, working on his outfield defense. His bat is there. He's a hardworking kid. He doesn't want to be in the minor leagues. He wants to be in the majors. He's a major league outfielder. Somebody is going to plug him into their outfield and be very happy. What team that is, I don't know. He's got to be the piece to get you the last piece to pair with Tanaka at the top of this pitching rotation as you look to make a postseason run. Clint Frazier, some other minor leaguers from the lower levels of your system, bring back Madison Bumgarner, and there you go. And then the Andrew Miller trade turns into what? It turns into James Paxton. It turns into Madison Bumgarner. The Chapman trade turns into Gleyber Torres, and it turns into Jay Happ. Not to mention the fact that he got Chapman back as a free agent. Not a bad week's work for Brian Cashman back in 2016, but he's got one more chip to play. We'll see where Clint Frazier lands, and more importantly, what Clint Frazier brings back.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
We're going to take another swing at Stump Rothenberg this morning, Ty, are we not?
We're going to do that. Are we going to bat better than 500?
Well, we haven't yet. So I was adding up my batting average this morning. First week, 2-for-4.
Okay. Yes. So that's right at 500.
Right at 500. Last week, 2-for-5. And you threw me a lifeline at the end, which I appreciate, but I still got the question right, so we're going to count it. So 2-for-5 last week. So I'm 4-for-9. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's about, I'm one away from 500, first of all. Shaq shooting free throws early in his career.
Wasn't good.
4-for-9. I'm right around there. So
we got to do better today. Better than 500.
Let's go for it. We're going to do that at 10:30, right?
Yes, 10:30.
We'll do that at 10:30. The Stump Rothenberg with Pat O'Keefe once again. You know what? I'm not big on – I'm trying to think of the questions that have really tripped me up. And I hope people don't take this as a sign that I want you to call with these because I don't. 1950s television – not a strength of mine. Wrestling, not a huge strength of mine.
Music?
Not, it depends.
You've been nailing the sports history question.
Yeah, this is a sports talk show. If I wasn't nailing that, I'm going to have to show myself to the door. So anyway, we'll do that at 10:30. 10 o'clock also, we've got Ed Cohen, the radio play-by-play voice of the New York Knickerbockers. So we'll talk about what the Knicks have done this offseason with Ed coming up in about 25 minutes. For now, let's go back to the phones, 1-800-919-3776. Let's bring in James from Spring Valley. What's going on, James?
Pat, what's going on, brother?
How you doing?
Good. As far as the Yankees, I really think the Yankees need to get started pitching. I'm one of the people that I would love Madison Bumgarner. I mean, who I would really want is to come, but that's not going to happen.
No, that's not going to happen.
But I'm thinking, whatever package you got to do, and I was talking this about to Alan last night, whatever it is you got to do, you got to get that bulldog guy who's been there, done that, because I would love Serger, but the Nationals played themselves back in, so that's not going to happen. Bumgarner seems like the legit guy. I don't want Stroman. He seems like another Jay Happ to me. If you can get Bumgarner, get that guy. That's what I would
Thank you, James. The beauty of it is Domingo Germán has really made life easier for the Yankees. Germán, he's a guy, so much of it is based on track record. Germán is a guy coming into the season. He showed some signs last year, doesn't have a huge track record. Started off the season throwing gem after gem. And I can only speak for myself, was just waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then in late May, early June, he had three straight bad starts in a row. I said, okay, the rest of the league has finally caught up with Domingo Germán. Not that he's going to be a terrible pitcher, but he's going to land somewhere in the middle. But as it turns out, Germán was injured. He was pitching hurt those three starts. He goes on the IL. He's out for about a month. And he comes back, and his last two starts have been terrific. Now, granted, they were against the Mets. Although the Mets don't have a bad lineup, they were against the Mets and the Blue Jays. His last two starts have been terrific. Germán is really making life easier on Brian Cashman and the Yankees right now with his continued performance of excellence for a couple of reasons. Number one, there's not as much urgency to make a move now. He's stabilized the starting rotation at the top of it. So from the regular season perspective, you're fine. You don't need to pull the trigger right now to get a guy in here to win some games now. What you need is a guy to help win some games for you in October. And number two, Germán being back in the rotation means the Yankees have five starting pitchers right now, which is amazing to think. The Yankees went an entire month with four pitchers in their rotation. And I think for a week in there, they only had three healthy starters when CC Sabathia was out. So now you have five starting pitchers, which means you don't have to use Chad Green as your opener. Now you put Chad Green back into the bullpen to add to Tommy Canley and Adam Ottavino and Zach Britton and Aroldis Chapman. And that deep Yankees bullpen is now even deeper. Still waiting on Dellin Betances. Although, again, like I said about Severino, anything you get out of Betances this year is just going to be a blessing. I don't think you can count on that. But, yeah, the Yankees need a starting pitcher at the top of the rotation. Madison Bumgarner is the guy I want. James mentioned Scherzer and the Nationals. The Nationals have not only played themselves back into contention, they're actually the leading team in the wild card
in the National League right now. So Scherzer's not going to be on the table for the Yankees. I like Trevor Bauer, but I think you'd have to give up more for a guy who's under control next year than you would for a guy like Bumgarner, who's in the last year of his contract. But they need somebody. They need somebody for October. It's not going to be Luis Severino. Even if Severino comes back, and I talked about this with Scott at the end of his show, he and I are on the same page here. If Severino comes back, you plug him into that Nathan Eovaldi role that he filled for the Red Sox last year, where he was unbelievable. I mean, Eovaldi was the MVP of the entire postseason for the Red Sox last year. I can absolutely see Severino filling that role if he's healthy. If he's healthy. Because he's not going to be able to go six, seven innings. And if he only has to go an inning or two innings or three innings here, he'll be able to crank that fastball up to the high 90s and just get by on that. 1-800-919-3776. We'll check in with John down in Florida. Good morning, John.
Morning, Pat. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Just wanted to chime in. Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
The hurdle with Midas and Bumgarner is that Yankees are on his list of do not trade. Am I correct?
Yes.
And that hurdle, I don't know if he's willing to come to New York. A lot of what Madison Bumgarner reminds me of is a Randy Johnson in terms of his personality, a little bit more of an introvert instead of the, you know, a Trevor Bauer who's a little bit more hyped up than a Stroman. And those two guys would be on the top of my list if we could get him somehow. I've heard rumblings about Robbie Ray in Arizona.
Yep.
I know he's got a high strikeout rate, so I think that would work out in Yankee Stadium. But Madison Bumgarner, to me, just raises a little bit too many flags. Aside from, or, you know, his postseason record is phenomenal. For that alone, I'd try and get him if we could get him. But Domingo Germán, I hope his innings limit doesn't come back. I know he was off for some time.
Yeah, missing a month helped in that area. Back. Yep.
Right. So, we got to trust in Cashman. I know he's gonna make something happen. But, Madison Bumgarner just scares me a little bit too much in terms of personality.
You know what, John? And here's why I don't agree with that. You know, I think Madison Bumgarner kind of reminds me of Kawhi Leonard. You know, we've talked a lot about Kawhi Leonard lately. He's a superstar player. He's performed on the highest level. He's a multiple-time champion. And you really don't know anything about the dude. And Madison Bumgarner is kind of the same way. I mean, his in being introverted, being quiet, it's almost intimidating to other teams, I think, because here's this guy. You don't really know what he's thinking. He's very soft-spoken. You don't hear much of him at all. He just goes out in the biggest spots and does his job time after time after time. And he seems to be the kind of guy who, other than winning, doesn't really care about anything else. I think that can be misconstrued as not wanting the spotlight, not wanting the limelight, not wanting everything that comes with pitching in New York. But here's how I view the Yankees being one of his teams on the no-trade list. I view that as a tactical move by Bumgarner and his agent that if the Yankees do want to trade for him, they're going to make the Yankees offer him a contract extension and pay him for him to waive that no-trade clause. That's how I view that. The Yankees are at the 10-yard line here, okay? It's been a long process. There were years when they didn't go to the playoffs at all. The year they said goodbye to Jeter and the year they said goodbye to Mariano Rivera. And then they had a dalliance in the playoffs when A-Rod had his one resurgent year in 2015. And then they took a step back for the first time that any of us could remember, kind of broke it down a little bit in 2016. And ever since then, they've been building towards this. But at some point, you need to cross the goal line. At some point, you need to get back to the World Series if you're the New York Yankees, because the Yankees are on the verge of doing something that the franchise hasn't done in 100 years. The last time the Yankees went an entire decade without playing in the World Series was 1910 through 1919. That was before they ever even played in a World Series. Well, the last time the Yankees not only won the World Series but played in it was 10 years ago. It was 2009. It's amazing how fast 10 years goes by, but that's how long it's been. And this is their last chance to play in a World Series this decade. Now, they've done everything to get back to this point. They reset the luxury tax. So on top of being in position to win and make a deep playoff run, they're also not paying a huge luxury tax bill like they were in the past. They've done everything except get back to and win the World Series. And now they're just a couple of moves away from doing that. And one of those moves is going to be to open up the wallet and spend money again. Because if the only thing between getting Madison Bumgarner to agree to a trade is paying him a contract extension beyond this year, and he can help you win the World Series, then you've got to pay the man his money.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com. He's pompous.
Listen, shut up and I'll tell you the story.
He's arrogant.
Do you think there's a lot of things out there that I wouldn't be good at?
And sometimes he's downright mean.
I know you know what that's like, to be that uncomfortable, pimply face, not very popular kid.
But now it's your chance to prove him wrong.
It's dumb.
Call 800-919-3776 with your question and let's stump Dave Rothenberg.
Always fun to try to stump Dave Rothenberg. And lately, the callers have been stumping me. It's Stump Rothenberg with Pat O'Keefe, and Stump Rothenberg is brought to you by the law offices of Andrew M. Cohen. So 2 weeks now I've done this, thanks to the challenge that was laid down on air by Mr. Ty Butler.
Or by Mr. Dave Rothenberg.
Well, yes, you were the conduit
yes.
for Mr. Dave Rothenberg.
And I showed confidence in whoever, because I didn't know if it would be you or anyone else. I just showed confidence in whoever the fill-in would be, and I said you would bat 500, and then in your first show, you hit 500.
I did.
Last week, we were a little below that mark, but have confidence you're going to be a little bit better than you were last week.
We're still in the ball game. Okay, 2 for 5 last week, 2 for 4 the week prior.
And as you mentioned, you're one away from being 5 for 10.
Nice, I'll take 5 for 10.
Nice round number.
Well, a lot of that is going to depend on the caller. So give us a call, 1-800-919-3776 for Stump Rothenberg with Pat O'Keefe. All right. We ready for this, Ty? You got the bell ready?
We're ready.
You got the buzzer ready?
We're ready.
All right. First up on Stump Rothenberg with Pat O'Keefe is Joel in Rutherford. What's up, Joel?
Good morning, Pat. You're not getting a 500 on me, buddy.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
All in order. I'm going to give it to you in order. Only player ever to win the Heisman Trophy, national champion, first pick in the draft, rookie of the year.
Wow. Heisman, national champion, first pick in the draft, rookie of the year.
It's a lot easier than you think. Ty, how much time do you get, buddy?
How much time do I got left, Ty?
He's got 10 seconds left.
Okay.
I think Ty knows it.
All right.
5. You got to take a guess, Pat.
It's not, obviously, I'm going back. It's not Baker Mayfield. He didn't win the Rookie of the Year. He didn't win the National Championship.
Ty, do you know it?
I actually don't know it.
What is it, Joel?
Cam Newton.
Cam Newton.
That's a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, because he was only there for 1 year, really. He was so good that 1 year. That's bad job by me. That's right in my wheelhouse. Football's not even on my radar right now. So let's see. What was it now? Heisman Trophy, okay? Number one pick in the draft.
Rookie of the year.
Heisman Trophy, national championship.
Rookie of the year.
Number one pick in the draft, rookie of the year. That's a great question. I've never heard that question before. It wasn't that. He's right. It was right there in front of me. Son of a gun. All right, Joel. Good call, man. All right. Well, I'm not getting back to 500 on him. I could have. All right. Let's see what I got from John in Manhattan. What's up, John?
Good morning, Pat. This is kind of a hanging curve. It's doable. The pitchers that have the most consecutive Cy Young awards.
Well, Greg Maddux and Randy Johnson.
You got it.
Okay. 4 in a row. I appreciate that, John. That was kind of a hanging curve, but I'll take it anyway. I'll take it and I'll put it over the left field wall. So 1-1 today, Ty, and that's all we got on the screen right now.
Well, I got you right here. You mentioned if the Yankees don't make the World Series this year, it would be the first decade that's happened, where they missed the World Series in a decade. It would be the first time that happened in franchise history. So let's go back to 2009. When they beat the Phillies in 6 games, mm-hmm. game 6 being at the stadium, Hideki Matsui wins the World Series MVP. Who was the starter and received the win for the Yankees in game 6?
The starter who received the win for the Yankees in game 6 was the same starter who received the win for the Yankees in the clinching game in all three rounds of the playoffs that year, the wild card, the ALCS, and the World Series, and that was Andy Pettit.
Wow, that's correct.
Mish.
Yes.
Mish wants to jump in. So we're 2-1 so far. Let's see if my Philadelphia Eagles fan can pull me back to 500.
I'm not going sports here.
Oh, boy.
So this is kind of different.
I love different, Mish.
Okay, so my question is, in Fahrenheit, at what temperature does water freeze?
In Fahrenheit, water freezes at 32 degrees. Hey! And now the phone lines are lighting up. Mish, I appreciate that. All right, Stump Rothenberg with Pat O'Keefe. We're on a little bit of a hot streak right now. I actually could be 4-for-4, but I totally botched that first great question from Joel about the only guy to win the Heisman Trophy, the national championship, number one pick in the draft, and rookie of the year, and it was Cam Newton. But since then, we're back on track. We're going to get a couple more in here. 1-800-919-3776 is the number to call, as Ty is putting a few more up on the screen. All right. Ken in Connecticut. What's up, Ken? Welcome to Stump Rothenberg with Pat O'Keefe.
Who is the only person to play for the Yankees, the Knicks, and the Rangers in the same season?
Wow. The only person to play for the Yankees, the Knicks, and the Rangers in the same season.
Correct.
My goodness, this has to be some sort of a trick question.
Correct.
Not correct enough to get the bell from Ty. The only guy I know who crosses over sports like that who played for one of those teams was Dave DeBuscher, but I don't think it's him.
Want the answer?
Not the answer. Give me the answer. Ty's busy
Eddie
on the
Layton,
phone.
Keyboards.
Ah. He used to play the keyboard for LIU basketball at the old Paramount Theater on Flatbush Avenue, too, when LIU went to the NCAA tournament in 1997. Ken, good call. I appreciate that. All right. Only got to play for the Yankees, the Knicks, and the Rangers in the same season. You know, you get in the middle of this and your head's going down one track and you can't even adjust. Speaking out loud now. Lucas in the car. Welcome to Stump Rothenberg with Pat O'Keefe.
What's up, Pat?
What's going on?
So, in 2009, the Yankees and the Red Sox went into a 15-inning game. And in the bottom of the 15th, a Yankee hit a home run. Who was that Yankee?
It was Alex Emmanuel Rodriguez.
Correct.
A 2-0 win. Good call, Lucas. Thank you. I think A.J. Burnett started that game for the Yankees. What's that?
I was definitely thinking that, too. You're like, yep, okay, thank you.
You know I'm feeling it when I throw in the middle name.
Yeah.
That's a Michael K thing to do.
And when you don't allow him to even finish the question before you...
He finished.
and you nailed the score as if that was going to get you any extra points.
It didn't, did it?
No, it didn't.
All right.
And well, then you let him go so easily after you got it right. You were like, yep, bye.
We got some house money to play with here. All right. Let's go to Jay in Brooklyn. What's up, Jay?
Hello?
Jay, welcome to Stump Rothenberg with Pat O'Keefe.
Oh, it's Jerry.
Sorry, Jerry. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's okay. Which player scored the first basket in the NBA Finals? With, Toronto and Golden State Warriors.
Ooh. Interesting question. I'm going to go with Marc Gasol. Who was it, Jerry?
Danny Green.
Danny Green. Long Island's own.
That's right.
St. Mary's of Manhasset. Jerry, thanks. All right, we got one more?
We have one more.
Right, so
you did pull a Dave Rothenberg just now.
What's that?
Whenever he gets a question wrong...
He gets rid of them?
No, not only does he get rid of them,
yeah,
but he'll start giving you those extra nuggets that you did as if it's going to make up for the fact that you just got it wrong.
That's exactly what I was doing. And you called me out for it. All right, I'm not dipping below 500 today. I'm 4-3. So John from Queens is going to be next. We're going to bring him up in a second. If I get this wrong, I'm going to walk out of here 4-4 with my head held high.
You're just going to take the money and dip.
I am. I'm not dipping below 500 for the second week in a row. However, if I get this right and I go to 5-3, we'll see. Maybe we'll let it ride. Having some fun now. All right. John in Queens, welcome to Stump Rothenberg with Pat O'Keefe.
Good morning, Pat.
Good morning.
So I have a golf question since the Open Championship is coming up.
Yes, it is.
In the history of the PGA Tour, 8 golfers have broken 60. Only one has ever done it twice. Who's the one?
Oh, gosh. Wasn't it the guy recently? Was it Brant Snedeker?
No.
It wasn't. And it wasn't. Was it David Duval?
Brant Snedeker was the last guy to break 60, but the only guy who's done it more than once is Jim Furyk, who's also the only guy to shoot 58.
Jim Furyk. Good call, John. All right. So 4-4, and I think we're going to call it there, Ty.
Oh, man. Come on.
I'm wimping out. How long are we going to keep this going?
Do
we have more callers?
One more.
We got one more? All right. Here we go. Let's see. All right, we'll go with Mike in Massapequa. Mike, welcome to Stump Rothenberg. What's up?
I guess this is the tiebreaker because you're 4-4. All right, who is the only baseball player to play for all 4 New York baseball teams in their career?
To play for all 4 while they were in New York?
They weren't all in New York, but they played for all 4 teams that at one point were in New York.
Okay, Daryl Strawberry.
Correct.
Mike, thanks for the call. All right, what do you think, Ty?
You see what I did for you? I just set you up for...
I asked that question last week. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do
remember. I threw that back at one of our callers who called in.
But I just set you up for the grand finale. That's a heck of a way to go out.
That's a heck of a way to go out. Do I press my luck?
Yes, do it.
All right, Mish, let's go. Mish is the enabler. I got one more here on the screen. It's going to be an okay day or it's going to be a great day. And that depends on Alvin in Queens. Welcome to Stump Rothenberg with Pat O'Keefe, Alvin.
All right. What pitcher ended Joe DiMaggio 56 hitting streak?
I'm not going to know that one. I think it was against the Cleveland Indians, but I'm not going to. I'll Bob Feller. But I don't think it was. Was it even against the Indians?
I'm going to give you the first name.
Okay.
Jim.
Why don't you give me a last name too, Alvin?
All right. You put your groceries in it. That's the first 3 letters starts of the last name.
Jim Bagley?
Yeah.
Jim Bagley. I appreciate the hints. Oh, look at that. He gave me a buzzer for that.
So you end the day 5-5. Not bad.
Not bad. I'll take it. 5-5.
So
good questions
that?
Today.
What's that?
Overall?
Well,
9-10. 9-10. All right. I will take it. And Stump Rothenberg is brought to you by the law offices of Andrew M. Cohen. Whether the issue is simple or complex, the law office of Andrew M. Cohen can help you achieve your needs through careful legal planning. Call 516-877-0595 or visit amcohenlaw.com. Love that segment. I enjoy it more and more every week. I will be back next week. So we'll do Stump Rothenberg with Pat O'Keefe right here next week.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
Talk some Yankees, a little bit of Mets, and a lot of NBA action as well. Yanks getting going in about 2 hours in the Bronx against the Blue Jays. Jay Happ on the mound and your Yankees lineup. This is probably your A lineup right now without Giancarlo Stanton active. You have DJ LeMahieu leading off playing third. It's LeMahieu's birthday, by the way, for those interested. Aaron Judge batting second and right. Luke Voit off the injured list, batting third and playing first. Gary Sanchez cleaning up, catching. Edwin Encarnacion, the star of last night's game, batting fifth at DH. Didi Gregorius batting sixth at short. Aaron Hicks in center field batting seventh. Gleyber Torres at second batting eighth. And Brett Gardner in left field batting ninth with Jay Happ, the lefty, on the mound. 7-4 record, 5.02 earned run average. Clayton Richard pitches for the Blue Jays. Mets a little bit later this evening, a 6-10 start down in Miami. Noah Syndergaard against Zach Gallen. A bad performance for the Mets coming out of the All-Star break last night as they fall 11 games below 500 at 40 and 51. Also talking NBA, we had Ed Cohen on last hour. He's been keeping an eye on the Knicks Summer League and broadcasting those games on MSG Network along with Brendan Brown. Some signs of life from R.J. Barrett after a tough start his first two games. And Ignas Brazdeikis, who the Knicks picked in the second round out of Michigan, Big Ten Freshman of the Year last season, has kind of been the story so far for the Knicks. But Kevin Knox is down there and Mitchell Robinson is down there. And you start to look at what this new-look Knicks team can be on the court as we head towards training camp in September and into the season opener in October. So let's go back to the phones now and talk some NBA. James in Queens has been waiting for a while. James, what's going on?
Yeah, what's going on? So I'm looking at the roster side by side, the Nets versus the Knicks. I know it's not all about Nets versus Knicks, but I'm just looking at it minus Durant. I want to know, how do they have the better roster? I really think the Knicks have the better roster. When you go, you're talking about Marcus Morris, Peyton, Bobby Portis, Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson, Dennis Smith Jr., who they said we passed on, and now he's an afterthought now that we have him. Alonzo Trier, Vonleh, Brazdeikis, if you want to throw him in there, the number three pick, R.J. Barrett, Kadeem Allen came on last year, Taj Gibson, you know, good veteran, Wayne Ellington, Dotson gives you buckets, Reggie Bullock, you know what I mean? So that's a deep roster to me. So I'm looking at the Nets roster, and I'm looking at Jared Allen. Okay, Wilson Chandler, Nicholas Claxton, don't even know who that is. Dinwiddie's okay. Joe Harris, Kyrie, I don't know. DeAndre Jordan is pretty much washed. Caris LeVert, you know, and a couple of guys, Taurean Prince, I know, I'm not too familiar with. But I'm thinking, like, are you sure they're going to have a better record than the Knicks this upcoming season? And when Durant comes back, is that a better roster than he had in OKC when he lost to Golden State? And if not, how far do you think they're actually going to go?
All right, a couple things. I do not think that this is a better roster than what Durant had in Oklahoma City. However, it doesn't need to be, because when they almost went to the NBA Finals in 2016, they were playing in the Western Conference, so they needed to be better. The Nets don't need to be that good to get to the finals out of the East when Durant comes back. James, I think that when you're looking at these rosters, and if you want to compare the Knicks and the Nets side by side, what you have to take into consideration is how they fit with each other, because there is a lot more continuity on this Brooklyn Nets roster. You have the continuity of a team that went to the playoffs last year and won 42 games. So the pieces all fit together. The Jared Allen, the Caris LeVert, the Joe Harris, now you the Spencer Dinwiddie. Now you take out D'Angelo Russell, but you bring in what I can only assume will be a motivated second team All-NBA point guard in Kyrie Irving. So yeah, I do think if you're comparing the Knicks roster to the Nets roster, it's not just about the names, it's about how they fit together. And right now, we don't know how the Knicks roster is going to fit together. The Knicks have a lot more depth. I'll say this for the Knicks. I think if you look at 8 through 12 on the Knicks roster, I think those guys are better than the Nets roster, but that's only one component when you're comparing rosters.
Right, right. Of course. I'm just going on paper, you know, not taking into account chemistry and everything. But I think if you was a betting man, you might want to put the over on the Knicks and maybe an under on the Nets. I don't know if the Nets are going to be more than a 60, if that. I really don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. I would agree with you, James. I would agree with that, too. I don't know what the numbers are, but I think if you could put the over on the Knicks and take the under on the Nets, but the Nets are still winning more games than the Knicks, which is what I think is probably going to happen.
Yep. That's it. All right, thanks for taking my call, man.
All right, man. The Nets are all about chemistry. I mean, that's how they have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. These two stars saw the chemistry that was developed under Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson. They looked at that situation and they said, that's where I want to play. But there are questions. Number one, when does Kevin Durant come back? We can't even factor him in right now when we're comparing the Knicks and the Nets rosters, or the Nets roster with anybody, because right now Kevin Durant is not going to play. We don't know when that's going to happen. And number two, how does, if at all, I mean, he's going to affect it some way, but how does Kyrie Irving affect chemistry? Now, I wasn't inside the Celtics locker room last year, but I followed the situation very closely, as did most basketball fans. And from the outside anyway, it seemed like Kyrie Irving was not good for the team chemistry of the Boston Celtics. Now, that's not a reputation he's had throughout his career. it seemed to be the extreme on the negative side last year. So you don't write the guy off as saying he's a bad locker room presence, especially when you look at what Kyrie Irving did last year on the court. He had one of his best statistical seasons. He was a second-team All-NBA guard. Now, how is that going to translate into the Brooklyn Nets locker room in Kenny Atkinson's system? Look, I think the Nets, if you are trying to compare the Nets to last year's Nets team, I think they're at worst going to be as good, and most likely they're going to be better than they were last year. Now, are they a 50-win team? I don't know. There's the Irving chemistry question. How does he fit in? He's more of a ball-dominant guard than even D'Angelo Russell was. So how does that change the dynamic? And then if you look forward at what this Nets team can become, let's not fall into the trap of just saying they're going to bide their time for a year, and then when Kevin Durant comes back the year after, then they're going to contend for NBA championships. Because I think that is far too premature to say for a couple of reasons. Number one, and this is why I didn't think the Knicks should go after Kevin Durant and bring him into their team. You don't know how healthy Durant is going to be when he comes back, whether it's in the 2019-20 season or if it's for the 2020-21 season. Whenever he comes back, you don't know how healthy he's going to be. If he's 95% of what he is, great. Unbelievable. And if the Nets continue to improve and then you add Kevin Durant into that mix, then you really got something. But what if he's only 70% of what he was? What if he gets injured again? You don't know. And then the other question, and people have overlooked this. I don't know if they've overlooked this. That's not fair to say. I haven't heard this discussed as much as it would be a concern for me. Are we sure Kevin Durant can handle New York? Are we sure? Because when I was looking at Kevin Durant from a Knicks perspective last year, this is before the injury. This is during the year when the Knicks cleared all the salary cap space. And so much of the talk was Durant is coming to New York, and it's going to be either Kemba Walker or Kyrie Irving who comes with him. Remember those days? You remember those days. Well, when you're looking at that, of course you go after Kevin Durant if the injury never happens. No questions about it. You build everything around trying to bring him into the garden. But as I looked at that, one of the questions I had is how is he going to handle New York? Because he is a guy throughout his career who has been a little sensitive with the media. He has been a little... had a few confrontations with members of the media regarding critiques on his play. And that's in the Bay Area, where I understand the Golden State Warriors were a traveling rock band, but it's still not the level that you would get if Kevin Durant comes to New York. The first time he suits up in the black and white warmups and is on the floor at Barclays Center, it's going to be the media presence and the fan presence and all the attention is going to be as much, if not greater, than anything he experienced in Golden State. And how's he going to handle that? How's he going to handle that when he comes back to a Nets team that performed very well in his absence? And then it takes a little while for him to get adjusted. And people are saying, like they did this year. Remember this year? He got hurt. The Warriors went on to finish the series off against the Rockets. They swept the Trailblazers. And all of a sudden, people were starting to say, hey, Durant changes the way they have to play. These guys are more fun to watch without Kevin Durant.
But the question is, how much did that actually affect his production? Like the off-the-court drama with the media, you know, him getting snarky, like all you care about is winning.
Correct.
So
it did not affect his production a lot in Golden
State. In any way. It didn't affect his production in any way.
It's a different animal here, though. Because here's the thing. Most of the people who were covering him in Golden State were members of the national media, okay? Members of the New York media are a different group. They're a different group. Okay, they're all competing against each other, okay? The questions can be repetitive. They can be annoying. And Kevin Durant has shown a propensity to get annoyed by that type of questioning.
But is that going to affect his jump shot? Like, is he all of a sudden going to go from shooting 55% from the field?
You don't know.
To 45% just because the media,
you don't know,
is in his head?
Well, what if the media coverage and the attention and the unwanted attention in his case is greater than anything he's experienced before, and it does start to affect him?
Well, look, with Kevin Durant, one of the best basketball players I've ever seen, one of the most efficient scorers ever, two-time finals MVP, one-time regular season MVP, the biggest concern is the injury. coming back from the torn Achilles.
That's why I brought that point up first.
I have zero concern about him handling the media.
I wouldn't say I have zero concern. I think that's a concern. I think it's a legitimate concern.
If they're winning basketball games, then nothing else is going to matter.
But what if they're not? But what if they're not winning basketball games? Because that's when the confrontations with the media start to arise. He walked himself into a perfect situation in Golden State where not winning games was never really an issue during his 3 years there.
Well, yeah, they were trailing 3-2 in the series last year against the Rockets. They had a chance to lose that series.
Yes.
But my point is, if he is healthy, which, like I said, is my biggest concern.
We don't know. Yeah, we don't know
if
that.
If he's healthy and can play, the Nets, in my opinion, are going to be good. Like, you get Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, two of the, top 15 players in the NBA on the same team. They're going to win basketball games.
Are they going to win enough to satisfy everyone? When you say they're going to win basketball games, they could win 50 to 55 games. They could be the number two seed in the Eastern Conference. They can go to the Eastern Conference Finals. But if they don't get it done there, is that going to be winning enough to satisfy everybody?
Well, I think they will, because if Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are both healthy, name me a better duo in the Eastern Conference.
Well, it's not about duos. It's about teams. What if Milwaukee's a better team? What if Philadelphia's a better team?
Well, sure. But what we did see last year with the Nets, their group found something and put it together good enough for them to make the playoffs last year.
So the beauty of what the Nets did last year was they were able to do it without stars. And now they have kind of the biggest star, one of the biggest three stars.
I don't think that's a negative.
It's not a negative.
Having stars isn't a negative.
It's not as easy as it sounds, though, fitting that guy in.
It's the same situation the Knicks would have had. Like, this wouldn't be the conversation if the Knicks got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Sure, it would have. It was a conversation I had with people leading up to free agency. How's Kevin Durant going to handle New York? Whenever you saw him go off on a reporter out in the Bay Area, we looked at each other like, if he comes to New York, it's going to be greater here. How's he going to handle that?
I'm sure largely the conversation would have been much more optimistic. There would have been much more of a positive spin to having two of the best players in the NBA on your team, as opposed to with the Nets, we're kind of searching for how it can go wrong. Whereas, like I said, with the Knicks, it would have been all the ways this can go right.
Well, you don't have to search very far with the Nets for how it can go wrong. It can go very wrong if Kevin Durant doesn't recover from his Achilles injury. It's a big risk the Nets are taking.
That is absolutely the biggest
question. But it's not the only question mark. There are other question marks. There's question marks with every acquisition.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.